right, welcome back to the Portland Cool Podcast. It's more than weird. Get it? Great. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for subscribing on iTunes and giving us a rating there. And thanks for subscribing on Stitcher.com as well, if iTunes is not your thing. Thank you for liking the Facebook page and following us on social media, Twitter and Instagram with the handle @ThePortlandCool. Appreciate that. Thanks for the suggestions and comments and feedbacks on the interviews. I had a great comment from one fellow who was saying the audio is a little too low and he has a hard time hearing it. So that actually was valuable insight to me. Thank you for that. But mostly, thank you all for telling a friend. That really helps spread the word and kind of grows the Portland Cool Podcast. So thank you very much. Out on the road today, first time in a while, we've not done an interview here from my digs in Northeast Portland. We are here in Southwest Portland. It is a beautiful summer day, end of summer in the beginning of September. We're here, as I said, in Southwest Portland at the home of Betty and John. How are you two today?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for having me here. It's a lovely day in the evening, and these two have a really remarkable project. It's something very important to me, something very near and dear to me, and really it's important to all of us, and I'm excited to be here with these two and hear their insight about reducing waste. You may have heard their story about the fact that they were able to have no more than one can of trash for the entire year, which kind of made headlines, was in the news.
It was in the Oregonian, yeah. There was a story in February of 2013.
So yeah, a big deal. I mean, who knows how many cans of trash people put out there. Maybe you guys have some insight into statistics like that. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you guys are making one per household per year is truly remarkable. And I'm really excited to hear about how that works, how that's done. On top of that, the two of you are also responsible for your website, reduceyourwasteproject.com. Can the two of you tell us a little bit of a synopsis of that? What is that, briefly in your own words, and then we'll talk more about that.
The website?
Yeah.
So, well, the website is there to hopefully get people's attention, to lead them to the class that we teach, mm-hmm. and also read the posts that I put on there. It's people really don't realize, I think, that their small actions make a difference. They think it has to be something big and, you know, monumental, the changes that they make. And so they may discount that the small things do matter. And we, in our own lives, started out just doing small actions, and we've gotten to this one can of garbage a year. And so people ask, you know, how did you do that? So we decided to begin the class, and then maybe a year or so ago decided to have a website so that people could find it and get engaged with the idea of reducing their waste.
Really cool.
The idea of one can of garbage was never originally a thought that we had for a goal that we would try to achieve. It just kind of presented itself over a number of years of finding small ways, as Betty mentioned, to reduce our own amount of waste that we were generating. But it took years to do it, and there was one point, maybe now about 8 or 9 years ago, that we realized that, wow, look how far we've come, and look what might now be possible. It kind of became a vision at that point, but never at the start.
Wow.
The first year we had one can of garbage year was 2006, so it's been since then just one can a year. The longest we've gone with filling one can is 16 months so far.
Wow, again, really remarkable. I mean, when we stop and think about how much waste anyone creates, even if they are being pretty conscientious of not creating a lot of waste or consuming a lot that would lead to waste, still. It's just very remarkable. Thank you for telling us a little bit about that. Let's give everyone some information on where they can go to find out more about the website. Please check out reduceyourwasteproject.com. That's all one word, reduceyourwasteproject.com. From there, go ahead and like the Facebook page, facebook.com/reduceyourwasteproject. So can the two of you tell us a little bit about your backgrounds? Where are you two from?
Well, I'll let John tell his story. I'll go first, though. So I'm from Corvallis. I grew up in Corvallis, was born there, and have
safest town in America.
Is it?
Safest in terms of fewest natural disasters and...
Interesting. I didn't know that. Well, it was a great town to grow up in, I have to say. We moved up here in 1974 and have been here ever since.
Okay. And did you know, you know, much about Portland at that time before you moved up
here? It was the big city you wanted to move to, yeah. So we came up here because it was you know, there was more going on in Portland than certainly in Corvallis.
And that must have been exciting. I mean, Corvallis is a very lovely place. I love it down there. It's beautiful. It's scenic. You've got the hills out there. The trees are wonderful. It's a nice college town. But I guess I could imagine how one living there for a long time would be excited to see the big city of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I grew up in Corvallis too. Ironically, Betty and I were actually in the same high school class, but weren't really familiar to a very great extent with each other. We didn't meet until junior year on campus at OSU. So, and that was maybe a couple of years. When did we start recycling down there?
It was 72.
Yeah, in 1972, we had our first opportunity to recycle. So, and it was a drop-off site, and the only possibility was to drop off cardboard, newspaper, and
tin cans.
And that was it. And so that's how we all got started. And then we moved to Portland, and the city of Portland over the years made more recycling opportunities available. We took advantage of them. Curbside recycling comes to mind. And then there are some
when was it? Do you recall the year when the curbside recycling?
Early
90s, okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, but in the meantime, there did exist some private drop-off sites up here too. And so we would use those, but it was really when the city of Portland got behind recycling that it helped us to kind of propel forward, not knowing where we would end up at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just kind of stopping and thinking about that when recycling would have first become available and how exciting that may have been. Someone like myself who has grown up and that's always been available, I suppose, kind of takes that for granted.
Uh-huh.
Recycling is always available. How is it that you guys came to learn about this opportunity to drop off your stuff to recycle in Corvallis?
Oh, I think it might have been through a campus bulletin board announcing that seems familiar that I remember growing.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of leads me to my next question here about, like, where were you in life when you realized that, you know, our way of life, our American way of life, creates a lot of waste, and that's bad, and something needs to be done, and something can be done. I mean, are you able to pinpoint kind of a moment in your life where you kind of had that realization that we can do something?
Well, it as John said earlier, it's kind of a long story, but so in the early 90s, I think it was 1993, we were in the second master recycler class. The program had just gotten started, and we saw the ad in the newspaper, but the first class filled up instantly, and so then we were in the second class, and one of the things that struck me in the master recycler class was, where is a way? You know, where does all this garbage go?
Right.
And that was like, oh yeah, what happens to all this stuff that we have? At the time, we were both still in retail. And so I had managed a clothing store at Washington Square for about 8.5 years.
Dub Square, the kids call it.
Oh, Dub Square, okay, huh. And so I would see ladies shopping, and they'd come into the store to buy things, and you could tell that made them really feel good. You know, like, I feel good about myself now. I've bought myself a treat. And then they'd be back next week to help themselves feel good again. And it just kind of watching how people were basically filling up their souls with stuff made a big impression on me. And then the Master Recycler class. And then we got involved with Northwest Earth Institute in 1994 when it first got started.
Okay.
Founded here by Dick and Jean Roy, and that was like the path to heaven as far as I was concerned, because we did a lot of learning about environment and the impacts of our of what we do. So that was just huge. And then I have helped them with curriculum. They have environmental education discussion courses about different topics, and so I've helped with the courses for many years now.
So that's interesting. I was going to ask you, were there some sort of influences around you that would kind of contribute to this perspective you have or this way of thinking that just kind of consuming and getting that quick fix of having something new is good? You kind of witnessed that firsthand in your own eyes and kind of came to that realization on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm putting words in your mouth, were there some other influences at all? Or
well, just
like you
mentioned.
Said, the
yeah.
Okay.
Watching people and then, like I said, Northwest Earth Institute, because one of the big parts, things that I got out of NWEI's discussion courses at the very beginning was, like I said, in Master Recyclers, it was where is a way, but in Northwest Earth Institute, it was about where does it come from? Where does all this stuff come from? Well, we're taking it all out of the earth, you know? And so we decided that, hey, let's just stop using paper napkins and paper towels. That was the first thing we did, because we didn't want to use up the trees. So we decided we'd use cloth instead. And slowly but surely, like John said, we started making all these one-at-a-time changes. I think it's really important for people not to try to do too much at once. You change a habit and you get into that, and then you make another change. And so with all our slow but sure habits, we went from, you know, weekly garbage to one can a month, and then maybe every other month. And so for several years we had two cans a year, and then 2006 got to the one can a year. But it was trying to be aware of what we were bringing into our house.
Uh-huh.
Instead of, you know, well, recycling is great, but that's downstream, you know.
Right.
And so it's nice, we have wonderful opportunities here in Portland. So many places don't have good opportunities like we do here with Far West Recycling and some of the other places that you can take things, and all the reuse options like scrap and the rebuilding center, but
community warehouse
exactly.
Both
that's one of
good
my
podcast topics from the Portland Cool podcast. Scrap with Kelly Powers. I'm sorry, Colleen. Oh my goodness, I'm forgetting now. Scrap and the Community Warehouse are both great podcast episodes in the past. Also, by the way, there's another episode with the Master Recyclers. If you're not familiar with what we're referring to when we say Master Recyclers, I encourage you to listen to an earlier episode of the Portland Cool podcast titled Master Recyclers with Lauren Norris, who is a big part of it there, and who I learned the class from myself. Back a few years ago. That's why I was saying this is something that's very near and dear to me. It's something I take a lot of pride in personally, being able to say I'm a master recycler. I have this this knowledge I can sort of use to, you know, make a difference and help to influence people. And like I said, it's important to all of us. So go ahead and listen to that episode if you're interested. It's a really good one. I know it was a while ago, but can you remember some of the things that you learned from the Master Recycler class?
Precycling was the big deal. I think they may teach that still. But precycling is stopping ahead, before you buy anything in the first place, stopping and thinking, what are you going to do with this at the end of its life? You know, are you going to have an option for it to go get reused, or is it just going to have to go in the dump? So that was really useful for us, and we use that a lot still, stopping to consider what we're going to do with something. And that makes, you know, makes me not buy stuff, not bring it into the house if I don't have a good option for it.
Just back up a little bit.
Please.
We discovered Master Recyclers and Northwest Earth Institute within a short period of one another. And I look back on them now and I realize that they were kind of complementary to one another. Master Recyclers, which is one of the OSU Extension Service programs like Master Gardeners when it first got started in conjunction, I think, with Multnomah County and Metro is how the program was offered. And so learning a bit through Mass Recyclers, got more familiar with the mechanics of recycling, but then shortly after discovering Northwest Earth Institute, got into a lot more of the, it's deeper, more of the psychology and the more soul-searching kind of material, and it's a lot deeper. And so they were really good complements for one another. It was kind of getting a nice, good, holistic approach to not only how to recycle, but why. And I think that's a good idea, knowing not only how, but why.
Yeah, absolutely. I, one of the things I remember from the classes, and like you said, Betty, the pre-recycling is that concept of how important that is. About what it is you're consuming, what it is you're bringing into your home. And I remember learning, like, even if you could somehow recycle absolutely everything you consume, I don't really think that's possible, everything, but even if you somehow could, you're really still kind of only barely scratching the surface when it comes to your impact and your footprint. It's really what you two have done about the waste reduction, about those steps beforehand. That's really remarkable. I'm really glad that you guys are able to share your insight and your best practices on that. I'm wondering here, you guys had, back when you had taken the class in the 90s, the Master Recycler class, the second class ever, you must have been very passionate. You've got kind of this vision or maybe a lot of ideas. How did it come together with kind of eventually, I guess it was a while later when you eventually created Reduce Your Waste Projects?
Yeah, that was only, we had to come up with a name for the website, so we chose Reduce Your Waste Project. Project because it's not something that's just simple and you snap your fingers. It is a project to make these changes in your life, so I consciously chose that. We've been teaching our Less is More class for a long time now. It's probably since 2008, I want to say, that we've offered the Less is More class.
How does the class work? How many people are in them?
Usually 8 to 12 people.
Oh,
I like
wow.
to keep it small so that, I mean, it can be bigger. I've done presentations at workplaces.
Okay.
And so more people, I think the largest has been 20 or so people. But I like it to be smallish because then people have a chance to talk. They're comfortable talking in small groups,
yes.
but they also have time to talk to each other and share ideas, and it's really very interactive, and people get all jazzed about the kinds of things they're learning and excited about it. So it's a 3-session class, 2 hours each session, and the reason, it'd be nice if I could do the class in 1 hour and everybody would go home and they'd know everything. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
So people really need to have a little bit deeper information, in my opinion, because if you want people to change things, they have to have a good reason to do it.
Yeah.
And if they understand the why of something, then they're willing to step up and say, oh, okay, this makes a difference. This is what I can do. So anyway, so we do the class maybe 5 times a year
okay.
right now. The next one's in October. And
did we schedule it for end of October or middle of October? I don't remember.
It's October 27th, November 3rd, and November 10th.
One coming up soon.
Correct.
That class is all booked out?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
No, it's a matter of people finding the classes. So.
Well, certainly after they hear the Portland Cool podcast, they'll be all over. You guys won't be turning away people. I'm really interested in kind of the moment. When anyone has like a passion and a project like this, and you have sort of this vision in your mind of what it would look like, but you're not there yet, that moment of kind of taking that next step and saying, I have this really good idea, but it's going to take this, this, and that to be able to get it up off the ground and kind of moving forward. Can you describe some of those moments and those thoughts you had to kind of push this idea forward to actually, making it come to fruition, making it an actual class?
I don't know if I can. Let me think about that. So people would just ask us. I would mention,
uh-huh.
hey, we made it to one can of garbage a year, and people would say, how did you do that?
Right.
And so we decided, hey, well, people want to know about it, so let's offer a class. And so some friends originally took the class, the first couple classes, and then I offered it to PCC Sylvania, well, through PCC Sylvania, and we did a few classes that way. And then it's just kind of been more organic than anything else until designing the, having the website put together,
mm-hmm.
And the Facebook page. And the Facebook page I really like, actually, because I, for me, it's not, not to try and make money at this, but it's to get people to be able to, you know, start thinking about these kinds of things. And the Facebook page, I post a lot of information that I find other places, you know, just so people can get a sense of these are easy, simple things that they can do just to reduce their impact.
I like the Facebook page today. I'm now following it.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, let's take a moment then to let everyone know again where we can go to get more information about the website and find the Facebook page. And I guess from there you can learn how you can sign up for the class, right?
Correct.
Still have some openings for October.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, the website is reduceyourwasteproject.com. From there, please go ahead and like the Facebook page, facebook.com/reduceyourwasteproject. There's some other details I should get in there?
Oh, we were just saying that anybody, who, if they register for the class as a result of the podcast, if they mention the podcast, they can have 10% off the class.
Hey, right on. Everyone wins. I have this question written down here about kind of the tangible effect of your guys' class. Is it possible to quantify how much waste is being reduced by this project in this class?
Gosh, I wish I could say so. No.
Yeah.
I haven't tried to find out from the people that take the class,
sure,
specifically the kinds of things they do. One of the things we do in the class, though, that I think is really helpful is people bring in, one of the things they bring in is they, five items that they don't know how to do anything with, like either can they recycle them, is it garbage, what is it? So we talk about those. We do pretty thorough explanation of recycling here in the metro area so that they really get it, because all these people are self-selecting. Obviously, they want to do a good job,
right,
at this, but you'd be surprised. I was surprised in the class how many people didn't really know how to recycle correctly. So one session, we talk a lot about that, and we don't allow any wish cycling.
Wish cycling.
Yeah, I just saw that on, it was a story of Stuff Post, and it's wish cycling. A lot of people think that if they put something in the recycling bin, automatically they'll find a way to recycle it.
Uh-huh.
And that's not how it works. That makes the recyclers have to pay to get rid of other people's garbage.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, so we have people go home and look in their garbage can, see what's in it. Huh. You know, whoever looks at their garbage, really. So they become more and more conscious. And it's really cool because people get very excited by the end of it. And as one person said, once you know this stuff, you can't go back.
We've had one gentleman in the neighborhood took the class and apparently had great results at his house employing some of the techniques, and emailed us about it.
Nice.
And I think we've had a couple of people find employment because of taking the class.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yes.
Yeah. One of the very first fellows, I think the very first class I offered, a young man who was at PSU at the time took it. And recently, he's now with the city of, I think it's Fort Collins, Colorado, and he recently messaged me that he attributes his career and his choice to taking my class.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
It was very cool.
Very rewarding.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Yeah, just the fact that we know of one person whose life was changed by this class is 100% success for offering the class.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to think and say to people, my friends, when I was taking the Master Recycler class, you know, I was so fired up about it. I was so passionate about it. And I was realizing to myself, you know, the difference between myself and my friend who's not taking the class is that I just have a little bit more information they do. And
mm-hmm.
I was thinking how far a little bit of information goes.
Exactly.
And that's the cool thing about the Master Recyclers, their movement, how passionate they are about kind of spreading that information and getting it out there. And it's true. It really makes a big difference. And it's kind of like what you were saying. It's to reduce waste. It's a lot of little things. It doesn't happen overnight. But if
and
you can kind of
have
that
information.
Right. If you kind of have that information, you at least have a place to start from. You're on the right track.
We've kind of branched out into not just bringing in stuff in the house that then either is garbage or needs to be recycled, but also we found ways to reduce resources in our house, water usage, electricity, those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's not just we talk about that in the last class, the third class. Mm-hmm. We talk about reducing your waste of resources, because that's huge. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're very careful with our water. We planted native plants in the yard, and we use the buckets to flush, and so or we take water, we catch water, and we put it outside in our garden.
Cool.
Yeah, so we have lots and lots and lots of practices that we share and have discovered for ourselves. And the cool thing about it, this is one thing that I think is really fun, is that once you start doing these things, you go, oh, what else could I do? Let me think of some other great ways to use something or to reduce your waste. Or, you know, and the other thing too, one of the things we learned through Northwest Earth Institute is there's a book called Your Money or Your Life, which now is an old classic. And
what is that called again?
Your Money or Your Life.
Okay.
And it was written by Joe Dominguez and Vicki Robin.
Okay.
And it was about, okay, so you work and you're taking your life energy to go earn money. Is that what you really want to be doing? Could you reduce the amount of money you spend and therefore maybe reduce your work? And a lot of people don't think about it that way, but if there's this big food waste issue,
right,
in the world probably, but in the United States, where they say that people waste 25% to 30% or more of the food that they buy.
Yeah.
Well, that's 25% to 30% of their food budget.
Right.
That you've just worked really hard to get.
That's
Does
crazy.
Does this really make sense?
No.
You know, so wait a second. Let's look at this a little more carefully. And you know, we just love being creative with the kinds of things that we figure out ways to do. And we were very fortunate with the recession because of our pretty simple lifestyle. We didn't have any problem adjusting to that.
Nice. Well, we've talked a lot about kind of the concept of the pre-recycling, the pre-cycling, and, you know, not bringing so much stuff into your home. Today, before I was coming out here to do the interview and I was doing a little cooking, I was unwrapping a brand new package of tofurkey, which I really like, which has the, like, cardboard part of it you can recycle. And the...
No.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Finish your story.
Theoretically, maybe you could. But then it has the plastic wrapping that you can. This has to be thrown away. It can't be reused. It can't go back into the product cycle. And I was thinking to myself, like, you know, it's really important to me to not create a lot of waste, but how can I, you know, actually do that? Can you two tell us a bit more detail about those mechanics you actually do, some of these best practices to not have that waste?
Well, we do watch the packaging that it's in, and I'm sorry for interrupting, but
no problem at all.
If it's any kind of packaging that is what they call wet strength paper, anything that's made to be in a freezer compartment or a cooling compartment at the grocery store,
that's right,
is wet strength. And so that means it doesn't break down in the paper making process. It's either impregnated with plastic fibers or coated with plastic, and so that can't go in the recycling because it won't break down. Killed me when I learned that, because that meant my butter boxes had to go in the,
right,
in the garbage can.
That's a lot of cardboard stuff that you think about. Anything in your freezer.
So ideally, the manufacturers would change what they use, although I've heard that that is required by either USDA or FDA to have that wet strength paper. Mm-hmm. But in the old days, things were different. There's a great movie called The Clean Bin Project that I recommend to everybody, and they learn how the manufacturers made really attractive reusable packaging for their products, because that was going to get people's attention, because they could take this thing home and use it, you know. So we've just become such a throwaway society.
She's referring to packaging from 180 years ago, when they were crafted and to be decorative and reusable.
Uh-huh.
So a flour sack, for example, might be made into an apron or kitchen curtains or a little girl's dress, that sort of thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, waste is a pretty new thing since the early, I think it was in the early 1900s, the municipalities had to start taking on garbage because too much was being thrown in the street. But there's a great book called Waste and Want, and she talks about the history of waste and how it happened. And it's really the rich that could only afford, they were the only ones who could afford to waste previously because everybody else didn't have enough money to be able to waste the things that they had.
Yeah, kind of on that note, maybe I could play devil's advocate for a moment. Did you mention the documentary Story of Stuff earlier?
Yes.
I had seen that earlier, and I'm kind of paraphrasing from that. I think there's the scene in it where it was one of the older presidential administrations that said, said the only way America can sustain its economy is to continue to produce commodities that are consumed over and over again. And a lot of people's jobs and livelihood kind of depends on this model. So, you know, I don't know how we would change that at this point. I mean, do you two ever kind of have thoughts about that? Like, how can we not have a lot of waste and still be able to provide jobs for people and make it work for everyone? Is that possible?
It is. There are no more jobs making buggy whips and horseshoes. There's no more jobs.
That's true.
Yeah. So as technology changes, as as society advances, jobs will change with it, and we need to continue to move into an era of renewable energy and infrastructure rebuilding and that sort of thing. There's plenty of jobs to be had in a new way of thinking about the old paradigm.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, that's important to shift that paradigm, to realize that ultimately the old model, produce and consume, is not sustainable, period.
Right.
If we continue with that model, we're just going to have a bunch of trash everywhere, and it simply will not work. We have to adapt, we have to evolve, and we have to be able to not create so much waste.
Well, this, you were talking about earlier about, did I know some statistics? They say that every American produces over 7 pounds of garbage a day.
7 pounds per day.
Now, that is a statistic where they're, you know, lumping everybody together and averaging it, right?
Right.
It's for the whole waste shed where people live. Because I said, I do not.
Right.
I don't create that much garbage, thank you very much.
Yeah.
But that's over the whole waste shed. And so, obviously, that's not sustainable. You can't have everybody throwing away that much stuff. Because, like I said, you're taking it out of the planet, and you're making it into stuff, and you're transporting it, and all the energy that goes into it, and all the water use. And frankly, you know, that's just the only thing that can grow continuously as a cancer cell.
Yeah. So, not sustainable, period.
Right.
It's not going to work. It was kind of a foolish model.
You had referenced the Story of Stuff video just recently.
Yeah.
And
it's really good.
In it.
It is really good.
You may remember in it, we learned that for every can of garbage that a household puts out at curbside, that 70 cans of garbage were created in the production of that waste. And so there's a good example of how moving recycling upstream is going to help reduce waste.
Yeah, the reduce, reuse, recycle. The three R's, it's reduce first and then reuse and then recycle.
Right, that hierarchy of what's most efficient or sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Recycling actually does take quite a bit of energy when we break it down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really curious about, if we kind of switch gears here, the story of how the Oregonian eventually got your guys' story and how they got you the exposure to the fact that you're putting out the one can. How is it that they became aware of that?
Well, I had had conversations from time to time with the reporter that wrote the story,
mm-hmm.
who doesn't work for the Oregonian any longer, but Carrie Sturrock and I had conversations. conversations, and one time she finally said that, hey, I should write about you. And so she did.
There was a time when there was journalism. Right. And they had an environmental column weekly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so Betty knew Carrie. And so it happened that way.
And what was that like when, you know, you've got someone coming at you and saying, what you two are doing is so newsworthy, it's so important. I mean, what were the kind of emotions you two were having when you realized a lot of people are going to see you and see how cool of this project you guys have?
Well, the first thought was yippee, because I think everybody can do this. It's not that hard. You know, it's just a matter of stepping back and going, huh, you know, what could I do to reduce my waste? It's real simple. The other thing was, as soon as the article came out, we were shopping at one of the New Seasons stores, and one of the salespeople said, weren't you those people that were in that article?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. And I said, John, don't throw anything away. People will be watching.
People will be watching. Better be practicing what we preach.
Yeah.
And sorry, did I catch the details there with the dates? Did that happen before or after you had started the Reduce Your Waste project?
The class had been going. But and then as a result of the article, we had three concurrent sessions happening all at once.
Uh-huh.
You know? So I think about 60 people went through those classes. But anyway, so then that spring, I think it was, I decided to do the website. One of the class participants helped me get started with Facebook, and one of the young women, and then decided to do the website.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I could only imagine how fun that would be to, or how rewarding it would be. And not that you guys are really going for that, I would imagine, but still to get that notoriety, that recognition that, you know, we're doing this for everyone. We're doing this for the community, and we're doing this to leave a better legacy.
Exactly.
And hopefully people can kind of catch on that why we're doing this and why this is so important to us, or to you two rather. And people can take notice and kind of emulate what you two are doing.
It's kind of interesting, though, because sometimes people will, when we're with them, they're kind of like, oh, here they come, the recycling cops. But that's not, you know, if people choose to do this or not, that's fine. It's just what we choose to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll be kind of influenced or inspired by you. That's kind of how I always approach it. I don't want to be breathing down my friends' necks or my coworkers' necks.
Exactly.
And saying like, hey, you know, you could be recycling that, or maybe, I don't know, something like that. I really would not want to be that guy. I often think that same thing. If
mm-hmm.
perhaps people can just sort of see my example and understand why I'm doing that and why that's important to me, that's how I can really make a significant impact.
Right.
There.
The role model thing is really big, because if people don't know that these things happen, they, you know, it's like, oh, oblivious. But once they see somebody else doing it, they go, oh, that's really cool. How do you do that? And I think that's very important. And that's what happened with us, really, because the people who started Northwest Earth Institute originally, Dick and Jean Roy, they had one can of garbage a year.
Wow.
And so I went, hey, let's, you know, this is cool. I wonder if we'll ever be able to do that. And we finally made it. So we
yeah.
had our role models too.
May I ask you too, do you have separate jobs, separate occupations from this that you're doing outside of this?
Yes, that's, yes.
I like to ask that to kind of illustrate, you know, that this is a passion project that you're doing in your spare time, your free time. This is how passionate you are about this, and I think that's a nice thing to point out. You do have another day job.
Yeah, this is my avocation. Yeah, I work part-time at Metro Recycling Information, which is lovely because it fits in with my interests, but they don't have anything to do with this. You know, it's,
of course,
they're totally separate.
Yeah. And that's, so again, it's just neat to point that out, how, you know, passionate is. It's inspiring, really, to know that, you know, you, like many other people here in Portland, have a lot of passion, and it's really well received here, and it has the ability to gain a lot of momentum here. One last time, people, the website is reduceyourwasteproject.com. From there, please go ahead and like the Facebook page, facebook.com/reduceyourwasteproject. And by the way, you can find all of these links at the Portland Cool Podcast at theportlandcool.com, where, of course, all of the episodes are, all of the links and all of the photos. Check it out. It's pretty neat there. You can see what cool people in Portland are doing. So you two were mentioning earlier that this is not a tough task of being mindful of your waste and reducing it. But I guess it would take a degree of commitment and discipline and something that you make part of your lifestyle and something that you're kind of thinking about when you do everything. I mean, is this what would you say to someone who might be kind of hesitant or afraid of the change, hesitant to make any kind of change to their lifestyle?
Yeah, I recommend that they start with the simplest thing that they can think of that they can do, and integrate that and do that for a while, get that to be a habit, and then maybe pick something else, and just do things a little bit at a time. It is much easier to move a whole bunch of molehills one at a time than it is an entire mountain at mm-hmm. once. And I think it feels less daunting that way. And we've always encouraged our class participants to not to necessarily try to do exactly what we do, for example,
sure.
but to do what fits in with their own routines and within their abilities, within their own resources to be able to do things, and then collectively, everything mm-hmm. adds up to a big change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody doesn't have to do the same thing. Everybody should just do something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's in the class, one of the things that really makes an impression on people that I read with an excerpt from this book, because it made a big impression on me, and it's about, imagine you're at a potluck,
uh-huh.
and how much everything really looks good and it smells good and you want to have a bunch of food, but behind you in line are all the species of the planet and all the children to come and all that kind of stuff, and how much is your share,
uh-huh.
and how much should you take? And I really, and it, of course it's said more articulately than that, but that, made a big impression on me. And because I've been at potlucks where no food was left when
yeah.
you're at the end of the line, and I wasn't happy about it. And so, just to be mindful of, what is my share of all this stuff on the planet?
Yeah.
So
that kind of reminds me of a sentiment or notion that I think my mom shared with me, and it goes something like, I can't do all of the good that the world needs, but the world needs all of the good that I can do. And
cool.
It's just kind of keeping that in mind, those little things, each and every one you do, it all adds up. And no, you're probably not going to change the world overnight, but that's not the way to think about it. It's thinking about, what can I do, because it will all add up. One last thing I like to ask everyone that I do these interviews with is about your kind of thoughts on Portland. What can you say about Portland, with your involvement about this? What can we all learn from the two of you about Portland and your involvement with Reduce Your Waste Project?
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say that Portland as a city, I think, probably offers pretty good number of opportunities and places for recycling, ways to reduce waste, ways to repurpose and reuse things. For example, the pants that I'm wearing came from the St. Vincent de Paul thrift shop.
They're stylish.
Portland. The shirt that I'm wearing came from the Goodwill boutique shop in downtown Portland.
Fashionable.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunities. There's the rebuilding center and scrap, and there's Far West Fiber, which takes a whole range of recyclable products.
And the cool thing about Portland is that it's okay. All this stuff is cool, you know.
Yeah.
It's not unusual to have people sharing, which is really great. And paying attention to buying local and, you know, supporting farmers markets. It's a great place to be because of that. There's so much creativity and freedom to look at things differently here in Portland that I really appreciate.
And, several years ago when we were still active at Northwest Earth Institute, we even had a work-sharing arrangement with 10 other couples. And we called it a work party, and monthly we would meet at a house and do chores or projects for about 3 hours or so, and then have a potluck afterwards.
Okay.
And so if you've got 10 couples, you've got 20 people working for 3 hours, you've got 60 hours of labor, you can really accomplish a lot. And we've done things like wash windows, gardening,
painting
deck washing.
Lots of weeding.
Weeding. I mean, so sharing the work can really make it a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So there's another opportunity for this idea. And tool sharing. I think some neighborhoods do have tool sharing sheds. Where you don't, so that everybody doesn't have to own a drill and a leaf blower and, you know, on and on and on.
And there are repair cafes in Portland.
Yeah, yeah, that's
so
big.
Yeah, so I would say that Portland is pretty progressive, is what he's getting around to, as well as having a lot of opportunities. And I like it. I think Portland's cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a really nice note to take us out on. Betty and John, thank you so much for being here with us today and describing your project, your guys' passion for it. And I really hope that people will listen to this and be inspired to do what they can here in Portland and for their community for reducing their waste. Thank
and
you guys so much.
Take my class.
Take our class. That's right. Sign up soon. Spots available in October. And thank you all for listening to the Portland Cool Podcast. Again, thanks for subscribing on iTunes and giving us a rating there. And if iTunes is not your thing, you can find us on Stitcher.com as well. Thanks for liking the Facebook page. We really appreciate that. And the other social media, Twitter and Instagram with the handle @ThePortlandCool. And please, I'd love to hear more feedback and suggestions. And again, if you've got someone in mind who would be a great fit for the podcast, I'd really love to hear them. Go ahead and check out theportlandcool.com to get the information on how you can contact us and drop us a line. We'd really like to hear from you. Again, thank you guys so much for letting me do this interview. I really appreciate it. For Betty and John of ReduceYourWasteProject.com, thank you for listening to the Portland Cool Podcast. Stay weird.